She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
And we're back. Welcome to The Persistence. This is She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. We are still here. We're still persisting. We, that is Beatrice.
And Elizabeth.
And as you may have noticed, there are a few changes here because we are fewer people, right?
Yes.
So, Liz, what happened? Tell us what happened.
So, if you've been paying attention, you know that Heather has a family, and having a family and being an academic is a lot of unpaid labor, and we're going to talk about that today in our episode.
Yeah.
But she needed to take a step back, and we totally get that. And
completely.
Love her, and maybe she'll make some guest appearances in the future. And Heather, we love you, and we miss you so much.
So much.
For now, it's going to be the two of us with the occasional guest host, and maybe we'll get some more like permanent folks in the future. But we are still actively interested in promoting women's rights and feminism and bringing you as much information about that as we can.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we decided to take a bit of a break after Heather left us because we wanted to figure out how to go forward with this podcast.
We needed to mourn, too.
We needed to mourn, yeah, completely. And also think about, let's put it that way. We also want to do podcasts that's not, you know, self-exploiting. Because, of course, all of what we do is, like, unpaid work. So, and Heather's leaving us showed us that maybe there's another way of doing this.
Yeah.
That's also one of the reasons why we now have a Patreon account. Which is one of the big changes we wanted to tell you about. And so for those of you who are listening to podcasts, you're probably familiar with Patreon as a platform. The idea behind it basically is that via podcasts, you get a lot of free content that you can listen to however you like, however often you like. But if there are shows that you want to support, you can donate money to those shows. The donations on Patreon usually work via monthly donations, and they start at $1. So if you think that our podcast is worth supporting, then you can donate money every month.
And we want to make sure that the content stays free for everyone.
Absolutely.
But as Beatrice said, if you feel like you want to support us, absolutely support us. It's like public radio. If you, you know, feel like you're enjoying the content and want to support us and the feminist work that we're doing, then absolutely. We're telling people if they want to support us, they can. And just by listening to us, you're supporting us too.
Yeah, and I think it's also always important to remind ourselves that, especially as people who have been socialized as women, that the work we do is worth something and that it's not, you know, something to be ashamed of to actually say that.
Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. So if you can support us and if you want to support us, we'd be very, very happy and thankful for that. And then there's one thing there's three more things that I wanted to mention. I mean, we've been away for a long time, so I mean, the housekeeping has kind of stacked up. So
yeah, sorry about this. We'll get to like the rest of it.
Yeah. So first of all, and that was, I was so happy and excited about it and also so surprised because I'm one of those people who don't bookmark things. So I keep Googling my own podcast. So I typed She Who Persisted into Google.
You know, you could set up a Google alert.
You have a Google alert.
It will send you an email anytime new content with She Who Persisted is in it.
Well, thank you. I know how to do, I know how to do Google alerts. But I looked for a Blog Talk Radio page. Anyways, I Googled She Who Persisted, and what I came across was an article by Bustle, and it's like a list of, wait a minute, where is it? I have to Google it again because I did not bookmark it.
Oh my God.
Don't laugh at me. Okay, wait. We are not going to edit that out, by the way. This is going to stay in.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like feminist podcasts that teach you something or that you learn something
from. All right.
From.
Yeah. Well, I can't find it now. But I posted it on our Facebook anyways.
Yes,
so it's like they included us in a list. They included us in a list of like five feminist podcasts that you learn something from. And I was so excited when I read that because I think our podcast was the only independent podcast on the list. And yeah, like all of the other ones are like really big names, and it was like, how did they even like notice us, you know?
Yeah, how did you even find us?
How did you find us? But thank you, Bustle.
But yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Bustle.
Yeah, it was amazing. Thank you.
It was really a nice moment. I got really excited. And another thing that I also already posted or announced on our Facebook page, starting on the 1st of March, so it actually already happened when you're listening to this, up until the 8th of March, there's a feminist festival in Vienna that's called the Riot Festival. And then from the 8th of March to the 10th of March, there's Business Riot Festival. And if you are in Austria, or more specifically in Vienna, then I really encourage you to go there. She Who Persisted is going to do the radio, the Riot radio part of the festival. So, and we're going to do that to get together with Shan from Shan's Heldinnen, with Sarah from I've Got My Period, and Julia from Super Science Me, who are three awesome ladies who are having their own like radio shows and podcasts. They're all like Austrian women who do have amazing feminist podcasts, and we are going to do Riot Radio together, which you will be able to find on SoundCloud. I will post everything on Facebook. I just encourage you to go to the Riot Festival's homepage if you're in Austria and check the program out, because it's really amazing and it's for free.
And even if you're not in Austria, it's Semesterferien for most German universities. Like, hop on a train, head to Vienna and check it out.
And visit us.
Yeah. I mean, not me, just Beatrice. I'm still, we don't have Semesterferien in the US right now.
Yeah, Liz is still in the US. We are not recording this in a studio. We are recording this via Google Hangout, just in case you're wondering. Which is why it's really difficult technologically sometimes.
Yeah. It's very professional.
It's very, very professional. Yeah, but like this is the level of professionalism we're actually at, because we are recording this in two different situations, in two different countries, in two different continents, with two different microphone setups, and yes, it's still kind of working. So
yeah, it's awesome.
It's we are so great. Give us money. Okay. Then another thing that I want to say for the folks in Austria before we actually start the show is that at the moment, you probably know that there's a Frauenvolksbegehren going on, so like a women's popular petition, I think is what you call it.
Yeah.
Go and sign that. Go and sign that before you listen to this episode. We'll wait for you. Okay? Go now.
Yeah.
Okay, done? Perfect. Also, one thing that you can do while you wait for our next episode is listen to the podcast Deviant Women. It's just a podcast that I want to give a shout out here. It's really great. Every episode, they are talking about an amazing woman from history that you didn't hear about, probably. Or maybe you heard about her, but not enough.
Or you might have heard about them on our podcast, and they give more information.
Absolutely. And they're also really funny. So it's like, it's also conversational. It's two ladies hosting it. You'll like it. And then also, today's International Women's Day.
Woohoo!
It's the 8th of March. And in celebration of that, and also in celebration of the currently newly forming feminist persistence in Austria, aka the Frauenvolksbegehren, we are dedicating this episode to the topic of women's rights in Austria, which is where I come from and where I am at the moment.
Yeah. So Austria is a Western country. This is going to, like, we're going to give a little bit of background about, like, the women's movement in Austria, and then talk about kind of current issues in Austria. A lot of this is going to sound familiar because as a Western country, you know, a lot of other countries went through some of the same kind of movements.
Exactly.
But maybe with different backgrounds to them.
With different backgrounds and not as late as Austria usually does. We're always 50 years behind.
Well, yes. There are reasons for
yeah.
that.
That's true.
And in some countries, the situation is a lot worse
That's
than
true.
It is in Austria.
That is true.
So we'll give a little bit of background about the a country that maybe some folks don't know much about. We're not going to explicitly look at like LGBTQ issues here, except as it pertains to women. And by women, we mean all women, women identified persons. Let's get started.
Also, one thing that we'll leave out is the role and status of women during National Socialism, because I started adding things about it, but then I realized it's just such a huge topic that we cannot possibly cover it. So maybe that's something for another episode, but we're not going to talk about it here.
Yeah. So the beginnings of the Austrian women's movement and what we often refer to as kind of the first wave of the feminist movement, it originated from the events of 1848. And just a little bit of background, if you're not familiar with 1848, there were failed revolutions throughout Europe, including Austria, that in the spirit of the French Revolution sought rights and democracy. As part of this, the Democratic Women's Association in Austria protested against lower wages for women. Sound familiar, ladies?
Well, we've made so much progress since then.
Shit. but they were...
Well, I've got chocolate here. Cheers.
I've got coffee. That'll do okay. It for me for now. But they were ridiculed by many men. And because of the 1867 law on assembly and association, women were denied membership in explicitly political associations. And this organization for democratic women was dissolved shortly afterward. So instead, women formed associations that devoted themselves to charitable and educational concerns rather than political power. So... ladies were excluded from political participation, but they found a way to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, making sure that women can get an education is one of the best ways to improve women's position. So women's rights movements in Austria sought greater rights and opportunities for women in the field of education. So first, in 1869, they helped girls from all levels of society gain the right to continue their education at the secondary level. And this allowed women to get an education that would allow them to become active in professional fields, often as teachers and educators. After a lot of work on the part of the women's organizations in Austria, the first women students were admitted to the University of Vienna in 1897.
Wow.
They were initially restricted to studying art subjects, so humanities, liberal arts, yeah. Admittance to the medical faculty was granted in 1900, and finally in 1919, women gained access to all university disciplines, shortly after they gained the right to vote.
So that's not a long time ago, right? That's just 100 years. It's crazy.
That's just 100 years ago that women were allowed full access to all levels and all subjects at the university.
Yeah.
Second wave feminist movements in the post-World War II period brought about a lot of rights for women in the 70s and 80s, just like in the United States and a lot of other countries. In 1975, and we'll talk about this more later, they were allowed to have abortions within the first 3 months. In 75, women were allowed to work without the permission of their husbands.
So nice.
<My Jesus. laughs> In 1977, they got additional money for children?
Well, Karensgeld is like the money that you get when you stay at home with the child after it's born. It doesn't even exist in the US, like money. All right.
No. Okay. No.
Well, what am I thinking?
In Germany, I think it's called like Mutterschutzgeld, but yeah.
Yeah.
So they lengthened the amount of time that women could be out on maternity leave, and they increased the amount of money that you would get as a guaranteed income, but not an income, but for having children. And in 1989...
That's nervous laughter, by the way. That's not... She's not entertained by it. It's just...
No, it's... I'm not laughing for real. I'm laughing because this is so absurd. In 1989, rape in marriage was considered something that could be prosecuted.
Right. And there was a huge debate going on in Parliament, actually, because the Conservatives were very much against that. They argued that rape in marriage is not a thing at all, because kind of marriage already implies that you have to have sex with the other person. That doesn't need, like, that we don't need regulation, because there is no crime. It doesn't exist, right?
Well, I mean, we all know that once you get married, your body belongs to your husband anyway. So, I mean, it's his to do with as he wants, right?
Absolutely.
Fuck me. Jesus Christ. This is such bullshit. But 89, ladies. 89.
And actually, one of the people that ran for president in Austria last year, Andreas Kohl, he is one of the like big names, like one of the old white men in the Conservative Party in Austria. And he was one of the people who actually argued that. And up until very recently, he was kind of an active politician running for president. So, yay.
But let's talk about women's suffrage in Austria. So women got the right to vote in Austria in 1918. So United States is very close in time period to when Austrian women got the right to vote. Austria used to be a monarchy. A lot of things changed after the First World War in 1918. And for women's rights in Austria, it was an absolute game changer. As with many countries during the war, many men were away fighting and women had to fill in the gaps and entered into the workforce and to keep the war economy going. At the end of the war, and with the disintegration of the monarchy, it made way for the Austrian Republic, which was engulfed in societal and political changes that made it next to impossible to deny women the right to vote. So women gave the right to vote in 1918. Most women, we'll get to that. Not all women.
Yeah, and it was... I know. It's bad. Also, it was, of course, the first Austrian Republic, because after yes. that, we had World War II and National Socialism. And, of course, women were not really seen as active political figures.
No, they were baby makers. It's fine.
They were baby makers. Yeah. So there was also like a break in that during the time of World War II. Yeah. But as I said, we're not going to go into detail on that. Maybe one thing that we should add here is that starting in 1900, there was the so-called Gehorsamsparagraf. And I'm adding that here because it's so great that it's called Gehorsamsparagraf, because Gehorsam actually literally means obedience.
Yes.
And the Gehorsamsparagraf, obedience paragraph, basically, that's what it's called, assigns all decisions to the husband and demands from the wife to be obedient to him in all of his decisions. So
now might be a good time to point out that Austria is and has been for a very long time a Catholic country.
Oh, did we forget about that part?
We forgot about that part.
Oh!
So part of Austria being like a monarchy is that a monarchy was also Catholic.
Yeah.
And a lot of the laws and a lot of the like social regulations and mores were very much in line with the Catholic Church. So if that gives you maybe like a little bit of context, that might help.
It might help. It also might not. Maybe chocolate is the only thing that helps. Chocolate and hard liquor.
Maybe. So back to women's suffrage. There were, of course, debates about women's suffrage, including suggestions that men and women should cast their votes in differently colored envelopes.
Were those colors pink and blue?
Oh, I don't know if they were pink and blue, but they did actually vote with different colored envelopes in order to track and monitor female electoral behavior so that they could see who women were voting for. I mean, in a lot of ways, you think to yourself, okay, this is actually a way of saying, oh, we shouldn't, maybe we should keep track of this so we can see how screwed up women's voting is and like control them more. I mean, that's the like cynical side of me. But
yeah.
The fun thing is, so they use those different colored envelopes between 1920 and 1930. However, different colored envelopes were actually used in local elections in Vienna until 1996.
What the fuck? Really? I did not know yes! about that.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Fuck. Okay. So- that is, wow.
Yeah.
I just hope that the girl envelopes were like pink and glittery.
I hope so too. I hope they were fabulous.
Because listen, I wouldn't have gone there if they weren't pink and glittery. I'm not casting my vote in a boy envelope.
Well, it's like those pink razors and pink pens and like other women products, like pink envelopes for the ladies.
Yay. No, seriously, if you know more about this, write to us, because that's really interesting. I want to know what colors they were.
So
that's so crazy.
I mentioned that not all, it wasn't universal women's suffrage. Mm. Not all women were given the right to vote. Female sex workers remained excluded from the polls until 1923.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a period of time in there for about 5 years where, you know, if you were a sex worker, you didn't actually have the right to, you know, decide what was going on in your government. Again, if you think Austria is a Catholic country, pretty conservative, like social policies, female sex workers are not doing like productive work. They're probably having secret abortions and they're contributing to like poor morals. So not my opinion.
Oh, really? No,
not my opinion.
I'm surprised about that.
I know.
yeah, and actually up until this day, only 7.5% of all the mayors of Austrian towns and villages and cities are women. And only 34.79% of all the MPs in parliament are women and 37.5% of the current cabinet are women. But more on the government later.
Still better than the US.
Still better than the US.
Still better than the US.
We'll talk about our new government later, which is going to be the part of this podcast where I'm officially going to lose my mind. And since the 1st of January this year, there is also a new regulation that makes it mandatory for corporations with over 1,000 employees to fulfill a gender quota of 30% in the boards of directors. But it's still just 30% and it's only for corporations that are over 1,000 employees.
But so. It's progress. Germany has something similar.
It is progress. Yeah. And since we talked about, you know, politics, I wanted to talk about one person that I really admire a lot and that is kind of one of the most important like feminist figures in Austria, I think. And her name is Johanna Donal. So she was born in 1939 in Vienna and died in 2010, so quite recently. And she was Austria's first Minister for Women's Affairs in the year 1990, so also quite late. She was a member of the Social Democratic Party, the SPÖ. And yeah, as I said, she's an icon of the women's movement in Austria. And she initiated a lot of important legal progresses and basic women's rights in Austria, such as the right to work without having to ask your husband for permission. She made sexual harassment illegal as well as marital rape, which was considered to be non-existent up until the point, as I said. And yeah, also because of Johanna Donal, in the case of domestic violence, the perpetrator now has to leave the home, not the victim, which is in Austria called the so-called Wegweisungsrecht. And in that case, Austria was actually kind of a pioneer in Europe.
Holy shit, are you kidding me? They did something before other people?
Yes!
With regard to women's rights?
It's the only thing, I think, where Austria is kind of was kind of the pioneer, and it's because of Johanna Donal, basically. So she, I think I will talk about this a bit later also, but it basically means that if there's a case of domestic violence, of intimate partner violence, then up until this point, it was usually the women, so because the perpetrator was usually a man and the victim was usually a woman, so usually the woman had to kind of take her children and find somewhere to live.
Well, sure, because the man owned the home and he had all the money, so.
And now there's the regulation that the perpetrator has to leave and also is not allowed to come back, I think, for 10 days. That's progress, yeah.
So in terms of, we talked about this a little bit, that in 75, women were first allowed to work without the permission of their husbands. And I would assume for an unmarried woman that it would be her father's permission. You know, in 1979, the Equal Treatment Law was passed, and it makes various forms of discrimination against women illegal. It's been amended a number of times since it was first passed, but the law seeks to establish equal rights for women, especially in the workplace. It posits, for example, that the principle of pay equality, of equal pay for equal qualifications, and sets up commissions for the arbitration of complaints and violations related to pay, promotion, sexual discrimination, harassment. But as we know, just because it's a law doesn't mean that it actually happens. So there is a gender pay gap in Austria,
you
just
don't
as there's
say.
A gender pay gap elsewhere. And it's not simply because women do so much unpaid labor and caretaking and often can only work part-time. According to government statistics from 2016, depending on the industry, women in Austria earn between 57 and 85% of a man's income. There is only one industry in which women earn 99% of a woman's income, and that is in mining.
And there are so many women in mining, so that makes up a huge percentage. So,
and for women whose jobs are categorized as other, they earn only 64 cents on the euro. So although corporations in Austria with more than 150 employers must report the incomes of their employees, this increased transparency and mandatory reporting has not proven effective at reducing the pay gap. So these companies are supposed to report the pay of women and men in their organization. And this transparency was supposed to basically embarrass companies if they were doing the wrong thing. It has not worked. It's a good first step, but there need to be more transparency and openness and maybe just paying women with the same qualifications, the same amount.
I think it's not just about embarrassing companies. I think it's also so that women can also see whether they're paid less or not, and then they can also do something against that maybe, or ask for more pay.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's also one of the reasons.
So in addition to a general pay gap, women do two-thirds of all unpaid housework and caregiving, and therefore have to take on jobs that fit within a specific schedule, which are often underpaid positions or low-paying part-time jobs. 48.5% 8.1% of women in Austria work part-time, whereas only 10% of men do.
Yeah. So, yeah, women do most of the unpaid work, especially in the private sphere. I think that's also the case in America, probably. Yeah. So women statistically work 4 hours per day doing childcare, elderly care, cleaning, cooking, all the household things, you know. And when we talk about poverty and the participation in political and professional life, I think we also need to say that there are around 300,000 single parents in Austria, and that more than 90% of those are women. And of course, that also has an impact on how women can participate in their professional and political life. And on top of that, access to childcare is bad. Keeping that in mind and keeping the unfair and unequal distribution of childcare that we talked about, the bad access to childcare affects women much more than it does affect men, because it's mostly women are responsible for, who are made responsible for caring for the children. And very often women also don't have anyone else to care for the children because they're single parents. And then also the quality, the quantity, the costs and the opening hours of childcare facilities in Austria depend heavily on where you live. So obviously it's much worse in rural areas than it is in like urban centers like Vienna. 7 out of 10 children do not have access to childcare that is compatible with full-time work.
That's bad. So, but you know, that goes along with this like conservative social idea that, you know, well, women should be taking care of their children, so why would we allow women to have full-time jobs?
Yeah, why? We don't need childcare because that's what the women do at home.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
So, and only the last year of kindergarten in Austria is for free. I know that might sound like luxury for American ears, right?
Well, we have public school kindergarten. I mean, okay. If you're in fifth grade, you can go to kindergarten at a public school. And it's
free. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So in Austria, only like in Austria, there are 3 years of kindergarten.
Oh, yeah. Well, between three we and don't six. Have 3 years of
kindergarten. Yeah. Between 3 and 6, and only the last one is free. So only between 5 and 6 you can go for free. But that kindergarten is only open for 20 hours a week, which is not a full work week for us, for most of us, right? And also the lunch has to be paid by the parents. So, yeah, you can go there for free for 20 hours, but you don't get food.
Yeah.
Which is a huge issue when you think about the fact that women are paid much less, that they have much less money at their disposal than men. So, yeah. As Liz already said, the care for children and elderly is the main reason why women cannot work full time, because 80% of women between 25 and 49, for them, the care of a child under the age of 15 is the reason why they have to work part time. And obviously, as I said, that leads to a much smaller income combined with other factors in which women are discriminated against economically. That culminates to a huge problem when women get older. And I think that's not talked about enough, because when women retire, their pensions are much lower. So in Austria, we have a pay gap, like an all-in-all pay gap. Liz already said that it's different for different branches of the economy. But the overall pay gap is around 22%, but we have a pension gap of 40%, which is almost half. So women get almost half of the money that men get when they retire. And last year, there's also an equal pension day. So that's the year on which a man has already received as much pension as a woman will until the end of the year. And last year, that was the 27th of July.
Jesus.
So it's in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And of course, that leads to a lot of poverty amongst older women. And that's a huge topic in Austria. I think that is not talked about enough.
Yeah, I looked at the statistics for that too. Was it also that the retirement age for women is different than it is for men?
Yeah, it's legally different. I don't know the numbers now, but women can retire earlier than men. Yeah.
But because they don't have the money to retire earlier. So like...
I think the difference in pensions is hugely because women have longer times caring for children and elderly where they cannot work. It's because of part-time, and it's because they get paid less, because of course the pension that you get from the state after you retire is dependent on how much you paid in tax.
Sure.
And the less you earn, the less money you pay in tax, and the less money you'll get when you retire. So
okay, I just asking. So let's talk about violence against women, because that's a uplifting topic. We already know that rape in marriage was first made punishable by law in Austria in 1989, but the statistics regarding violence of women against Austria are as follows. According to a 2014 study on violence against women in Europe, One in every five Austrian women, so 20% of women over the age of 15, has experienced violence, either sexual or physical. 15% of women over the age of 15 have experienced stalking. Every third woman, or about 35% over the age of 15, have experienced some form of sexual harassment. And 38% of women have experienced psychological violence by a partner or an ex-partner. We'll talk about, in a later episode, women's rights and women's issues in the United States, but every third woman over the age of 15 experiencing some form of sexual harassment, I mean, that sounds about right to me.
Yeah, and I think it's really horrible that every fifth woman in a relationship is abused by their husband or boyfriend or partner. That's a huge number. Yeah. So if you have like five people in front of you, there's one of them suffers from intimate partner violence.
Absolutely. I mean, it's upsetting.
And unfortunately, we don't have nearly enough women's shelters in Austria. And in the year 2015, 350 women and children who would have needed to live there had to be sent away because there was no space and no money to care for them. And that's also horrible.
So is the funding for that provided by the state?
Yes. I mean, I think it's both state and donations. Okay. They also get money by the state, but not enough, obviously. Sure. And it's going to get a lot worse with a new government.
Yeah, of course. So we have some specific statistics about Vienna.
Ooh.
Beatrice, since you live in Vienna.
And it's the capital of Austria, so makes sense.
And it's the capital of Austria. So there is a Frauennotruf, mm-hmm. which is like an emergency telephone number for women, mm-hmm. which we don't have that in the United States, and that would be freaking
amazing.
You don't
have that.
Oh, no. I mean, not that's like 911. Like, 911 is just our general emergency number, but we don't have, I mean, you would have to remember a phone number of a, like, women's crisis organization that's local to you. It's not like there's a national, like, women's emergency number.
I have to say that, as far as I know, it's not national. It's just for Vienna.
Okay, just for
Vienna. But it's open 24 hours a day, and you can call when you're affected by sexualized physical or psychological violence, or have in the past. And it's, I can also say the number, it's 01 71 719 01 71 719. So you can call there.
That's great. Like I said, I'm sure that there are individual ones in cities, but I think that in the US they would probably just call 911,
yeah,
a general emergency number.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that other than the whole of Austria, Vienna is a lot more progressive. The state government has been in coalitions with the conservatives forever, basically. I mean, it's usually not good news for women if the conservatives are in power.
Yeah.
But in Vienna, we have a coalition between the Social Democrats and the Greens. So that makes for a lot more progressive politics.
Yeah. But so the women's emergency number in 2016 in Vienna, there were 10,209, not just calls. They had some personal mm-hmm. visits, some telephone calls, some emails, but 10,000 women were served by the emergency services. In Vienna in 2016, there were 3,237 police responses to violence in families.
I think that was not just responses, but those were the cases where the police forbid the perpetrator to enter the shared home again.
Yeah. Over 90% of the perpetrators of violence in families and in social networks are male. Female victims,
survivors.
Yeah, survivors experience violence almost exclusively through male perpetrators, about 95.3%. There are four women's shelters in Vienna, according to the statistics that we found online. And in 2016, there were mm-hmm. 625 women and 635 children who sought shelter in one of these four women's shelters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need a lot more than that. I mean, those women's shelters are needed a lot. It's really important that the government funds them sufficiently.
Yes.
And there's also the possibility to donate to them.
Yeah.
I think we have to add a link in our show notes. I didn't look it up, but you can donate to the women's shelters, and they really need it, especially right now, the situation that Austria is in right now, because we are having a very right-wing government. Apart from that, as I said, one thing that in which Austria was actually a pioneer is that since 1997, in the case of intimate partner violence and domestic violence, the perpetrator has to leave the shared living space and is not allowed to be there for 10 days. And before that, the mostly female survivors, we're often in the horrible situation of having to move out and look for a place to stay somewhere else, often with children. And of course, that's horrible when you are already in a very traumatic situation, having been abused, and then you have to move out of your home with your child. You probably don't have any money. So that's really good that we have that.
And it's no small thing to say to a friend like, hey, can we stay at your place with my child for who knows how long?
Not at all, no.
So one last thing, I was looking for statistics, specifically like violence against trans women, and I didn't find specific information about violence against trans women. But what I did find was something actually kind of interesting about Austria, that in April of 2017, the Regional Criminal Court of Vienna ruled that trans prisoners have the right to access hormone treatment and reassignment surgery while they're serving their sentence, which is pretty great.
That's not the case in the US, as far as I know.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but I mean, it would probably depend on the state.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But unlike some countries which recognize a third or alternate gender, Austria only recognizes male and female as acceptable genders. Now, if you transition, you can identify as, you know, the gender to which you transition, no problem. So transgender people in Austria are allowed to change their legal gender and name so that they match their gender identity, and they're not obliged to go through sex assignment surgery beforehand, which is also really great. But they can only choose male and female. They can't choose like a third, like genderqueer or whatever.
And that only happened very recently. I think just 2 or 3 years ago.
I think that's right.
Before that, I think there were very strict regulations on that. And people also had to undergo sex reassignment surgery. So that's also a very recent development that is positive. Yeah. I hope you still have chocolate, because on we go. Now, we also wanted to talk a bit about, and we already kind of talked a bit about abortion earlier. We are going to get into the issue of reproductive rights and reproductive freedom now. And I have to say that this is an issue that is very dear to my heart. I feel very passionate about it. And I think... I actually thought about why, because I never needed an abortion myself, but I still, like, I get so passionate about this issue. And I think for me, it has two elements to it. On the one hand, it's an issue where women are really discriminated against practically and so visibly, and which has very real implications on the actual lives of actual women. And on the other hand, it's also such a symbolic issue, because it shows so well the status of women and women's sexuality and women's bodies and women's pleasure. Yeah. And it's also an issue that is so deeply steeped in, it's not just knee deep, but neck deep in, like, at least in Austria, Catholic patriarchal notions of women's sexuality and women's bodies, and fuck all of that. Yeah. I get really passionate about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we mentioned earlier, in 1975, Austria legalized abortions up to the third month, theoretically. Theoretically, abortions can be performed later if there's physical or mental health threat to the pregnant woman, if there's an incurable problem with the development of the fetus, or if the patient is under 14. But this is all, like, very theoretical, and it suggests that, like, you know, you go online and it says, oh yeah, abortion's legal in Austria, but it's far more complicated than that.
It's far more complicated than that, yeah. So the thing is, abortion is not technically legal because this is a Catholic country. And I think the government just couldn't get to the point where they accepted it as something that can be legal. So the regulation in Austria, and that's something just so typically Austrian, it is not legal, but it is exempt from punishment. So it's still illegal, but you don't get punished for it within the first 12 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the exact language for it is, it says that it will be allowed. It's very passive, like it's allowed, but it's not that it's legal, it's that it's not being punished.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that also goes to show the influence of the Conservative Party and the Catholic Church upon the Conservative Party, because, of course, the Conservative Party cannot make abortion legal.
No.
But before that, and that happened in 1975, as Liz told you, abortion was punished with imprisonment, and many women had to go to so-called Engelmacherinnen to have abortions, and that's a very Austrian word.
Angel makers? Female angel makers.
Yeah, it literally translates as angel maker, and the in at the end is a suffix that denotes a female person.
Yeah.
And those were the women who performed abortions when they were still illegal. And many women, unsurprisingly, died of illegal abortions. Many suffered terrible physical and psychological consequences, and sometimes also legal consequences when they were caught. So 1975, and largely thanks to the Austrians' women's movement at the time, and the most important agent in that was the AUF, the Aktion Unabhängige Frauen, which you can translate as like Independent Women's Action.
Yeah.
So they started campaigning for the legalization of abortion in 1972. Or I wouldn't say they started campaigning for it, but that was the year where they became visible, I think, and where like the public noticed them. And they used slogans like "Mein Bauch gehört mir," like "My belly is mine," or "It belongs to me." And then "Ob Kinder oder keine, das entscheiden wir alleine." So if we have children or not, that's just our decision. It's not fun translating it to English because then it doesn't rhyme anymore. So the most famous or notorious, depending on what you think about the issue, demonstration for the right to have an abortion or the abolishment of paragraph 144, to be exact, back then, took place in 1972. And it also was a demonstration that took place in December, and it took place in Austria's biggest shopping street, the Marie-Hilfe-Straße. Everyone who's ever been in Vienna knows the Marie-Hilfe-Straße is like this huge street with a lot of shops where everyone buys their shit, especially in December when this demonstration took place. So you have to imagine it was December, so it's very busy. Everyone's buying the Christmas presents, and that there's this huge demonstration for women's rights. And what they did was Erika Mies, a women's rights activist, she dressed up as a convict in a cage. And in front of her were a priest, a judge, and a doctor. And at the end of this demonstration, she smashed that cage with an axe. So it was a pretty dramatic event during Christmas time. And we already told you that starting in 1975, women who had an abortion were exempt from punishment. But the fact that it's not legal, but just exempt from punishment, also means that no doctor has to perform an abortion. It also means that there are federal states in which there is not a single doctor who does perform abortions, especially in the more Catholic, conservative, rural regions or in places like Vorarlberg or the Tyrol. And many women have to travel from, I don't know, the Tyrol or Vorarlberg to Vienna to get an abortion. And I mean, Austria is not a huge country, but it can be an 8-hour travel.
Sure. You have to travel and you have to pay for that travel, and then you have to pay for the abortion.
Yeah. So it's very stressful in an already stressful situation, and not every woman can do it. Yeah. And then also the fact that it's just exempt from punishment, but not legal, also means that abortions always have to be paid for privately. So you have to remember here that Austria has public healthcare, but abortion is not covered by it. And abortions usually cost start at around 500 euros. And they cost up to around 1,000 euros. And that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money that you have to pay.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
And when you think about, I mean, many women probably also have abortions because they cannot afford to have a baby at this very moment. And then having to pay, I don't know, 500, 600 euros to not have a baby, that's a lot of money.
Yep.
And the fact that women have to pay for it is also extremely unfair on women because, first of all, it's not just women who make babies. There's someone else involved. Usually the costs are paid by women. You know, usually they're the ones who have to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
But also, abortions are a basic and oftentimes necessary medical procedure. And I think we cannot stress that enough. It's a basic medical procedure. It is necessary. And the fact that so many women don't have access to it, the fact that it's still such a taboo issue, the fact that access to it is made so difficult, shows the status of women. It shows how seriously their health and well-being are taken. It shows how seriously their freedom is taken by the state and the judicial system. And by the way, just a fun fact on the side, you can get Viagra via a doctoral prescription. So you only have to pay 5 euros for any prescription med because the rest is covered by public insurance. The pill has to be paid for privately. There's no free contraception available in Austria. That makes Austria the only country in Western Europe in which contraception and/or abortion is not even paid for partly by insurances. So if you're a man and can't have a boner, you get Viagra for 5 euros. If you are a woman and don't want to have children, you have to pay for your contraception privately. And if you
if you're a woman and don't want to have children, you should just not be having sex.
That's the point.
Austrians are don't do that type of thing.
So you have to pay for the pill privately, and if you want to have an abortion, if you have to have an abortion, you have to pay for that abortion privately, and that costs a lot of money.
Jesus.
So yeah, And I think that's why I said it's such a highly symbolic issue, because that just shows the difference, how the difference in value that is attributed to women's sexuality and men's sexuality, women's bodies and men's bodies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm so angry about this. Yeah, so Liz said theoretically the regulation doesn't sound that bad. You can get an abortion within 12 weeks. Practically, it's very often a catastrophe, to be honest. And there are a lot of hurdles to getting an abortion, especially if you live in a rural area, if you don't have the necessary cash. And then on top of that, the issue is such a taboo issue in Austria. And that's something you cannot put into numbers, but it's kind of my feeling as someone who lives in Austria. And it's kind of the impression that I have talking to people that so many people still think getting an abortion is basically murder, even young people, that it's completely unethical. And one thing that I also find to be very prevalent is that abortion is not even considered an option. You know, I come from a very small village. I didn't grow up with the idea that you can have an abortion, you know? So it's something that's just completely out of the ordinary, you know, something that people don't do.
Well, and some of that goes to education, right? I mean, if you don't ever learn that abortion is an option, or you learn that abortion is murder, then that's going to be your norm.
Yep. So I have to say that I have very vivid memories of my time in school, because in Austria we don't have sex ed, and I think that's still the case. We don't have sex ed in schools. What we do have is reproductive biology in biology classes. So you put a penis in a vagina, and then that penis ejaculates, and then there's a sperm cell and an egg cell, and then there's going to be a baby that comes out of that vagina.
That was a great explanation.
Thank you. That's what I learned. And then what is, I think, a huge problem in Austria is that a lot of sex ed is done in religion classes. So I don't know if you have that in America.
No, we don't do religion classes in school. That's something that you do there. They do it in Germany too, whatever. Like, no, we don't do religion class in school. We do sex ed sometimes, but we'll get to that next episode.
We have religion classes in school. They're not mandatory. You don't have to go there, but they're kind of standard. So everyone goes there.
Yeah.
At least up until the age of, I don't know, 14, when you decide, fuck Catholicism. But before that, you just basically, as a child, you're just in your religion class because everyone's there, right?
Sure.
And it's also during normal class I was, so it's just one subject that you have in school. And I had to attend Catholic religion classes up until I was 14, because then I decided that I don't want to anymore. And I vividly remember being taught by, in the school that you are in from the age of 10 to 14, right? We had a crazy teacher. And I don't think that she's like the only one, or that it's such an exception. I think that happens a lot, because she taught us that using contraception is murder.
What?
She taught us that condoms don't actually help to prevent HIV. And she told us that an IUD? Like the thing that you put in your body to, yeah. So she told us that that's basically murder. And I remember that because there was one woman, because one of the girls in our class, she told that to her mother, and her mother took her out of religion class because of
that. So the woman was kind of, I mean, the like condom thing, like, she was just lying.
Yes, of course, yeah. And she also showed us, and I remember that, and it shocked me so much. I remember that because I found it traumatizing, like at the age of, I don't know, I was maybe 11 or 12 or something. She showed us pictures and like videos of what she said is like abortions. And they were basically like, I remember those pictures of like pools of blood with like baby fingers sticking out and shit like that. And she said, like, that's what happens when you have an abortion. You kill all those innocent babies.
Yeah. I just want to say we might, before this, put a trigger warning.
That's too late. It's too late now.
It's too late? Okay, never mind.
It's late. You don't put trigger warnings after you say triggering things. That doesn't work.
Well, I'm just saying.
I mean, maybe we can put it in the show notes or something, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, that's what I learned. And that's not a joke. I mean, and I think, and I know, I mean, there were other people in my class, and I don't think that this was the only class that learned those things. So I got reproductive biology lessons in biology class, and I got sex ed, as in don't have sex and don't use contraception. And she also told us that we shouldn't have sex before marriage and all of those things. So, and she told me, by the way, I'm remembering all these things now. God, she told me that, because my parents aren't married, and she also told me that I should get my parents to marry because I'm kind of So that retrospectively,
you're a bastard. Oh, because you're a bastard. I'm a bastard. Like, there's something wrong with you. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. And she also told me that the devil's going to get me and shit like that. And I was so scared for a while that at the age of 12, I was a Catholic at the age of 12, and I started praying to Mary, and I put up pictures of Mary everywhere because I was afraid that the devil would get me because I'm a bastard.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Oh, sweet Jesus.
Sweet Jesus. Exactly. Exactly that. So, yeah. That's the sex ed that I got.
Wow.
And wow. I mean, yeah, behind that back, like, if you don't, like, get your shit together when you're older and kind of get your own education and think about these things critically, it's no surprise that abortion is something that's completely taboo. I mean, and there's one thing that you found out, which I found funny because it's not surprising at all, that Austria was also the last Western country that decriminalized adultery in
1997.
The last one in Europe. And up and before that, it was punishable by up to 6 months in prison. So, yay.
What the fuck? Oh, yeah. God. Okay. Yeah. And probably women got punished more than men did, of course.
Yeah, that would actually be my question, if there was a difference in how the law was then actually executed.
I don't know. We'll have to research that and get back to everybody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Austria today. And that is that Austria has a new government.
Okay. Okay. just a short break.
Yes.
First of all.
Yes.
I don't know how you feel right now listening to this, but it's going to be bad.
That's all right.
For lack of a better word. You need chocolate for this.
I just put like a little bit of like an intro to like what they claim
okay.
is on their websites.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So in 2017, Austria voted in a new government, and it's a coalition of the Conservative People's Party and the far right Freedom Party. So basically the most conservative government coalition that one could possibly imagine in Austria. And so the question is, what impact is this going to have with regard to women's rights in Austria?
It's a difficult question.
I know. The Freedom Party has explicitly stated that family is a communion of man and woman with common children, describing that as the natural nucleus of a functioning society. They were against same-sex marriage and have Obviously. Described themselves as having a birth-oriented family politics. And they are against quotas of gender mainstreaming as a form of discrimination. So, like, these rules for having 30% of women on boards of directors for larger corporations, screw that, that's discrimination.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the People's Party has, according to their website... According to their website, have explicitly stated that they have a zero tolerance policy with regard to violence against women. Their party platform explicitly focuses on fixing the pay gap, social security for women, particularly older women, family issues, and women's health, but conspicuously absent is any mention of abortion access. So, Beatrice, as someone who this affects, why don't you tell us how you feel about it?
I think all the Austrians listening started laughing when you said the UVP has explicitly stated they have a zero tolerance policy with regard to violence against women. It was like, all right.
It's just what they say on their website. They it's big letters on their website. We don't, zero tolerance policy.
Yeah, of course. Listen, I don't even know how to start talking about the topic of a new government without starting to scream and cry and laugh all at the same time. Because I'm emotionally completely overwhelmed with it. So first of all, the UVP, the People's Party, used to be the Conservative Party in Austria. But in 2017, a 30-year-old called Sebastian Kurz, which...
Their new millennial leader of the government.
Kurz, by the way, translates as short, so fun fact.
Take from that what you will.
Take what you will. So he basically demolished the old coalition between the Social Democrats and the Conservatives. Because the short version is he kind of seized power within the party. And the process alone is kind of very suspicious. He became the party leader. So you have this old conservative party who's been in existence since forever, whose structures have not changed since forever. And then all of a sudden this 30-year-old comes and says, well, here I am, I'm your new leader, and I don't want to be in a coalition with the SPÖ anymore. He then also changed the name of the People's Party, which was ÖVP, Österreichische Volkspartei, to New ÖVP, Liste Kurz. So he named it after himself.
This is sounding very familiar, but go on.
And he turned the party from a very conservative party rooted in very Catholic ideas when it comes to social policy and very like neoliberal ideas when it comes to economics to a very right-wing populist party. A lot of his campaigns circled around the issue of refugees. He basically took over many positions of the FPÖ. So he turned the ÖVP into a right-wing populist party. And what happened, and I found this really scary, and because I paid very close attention to it, because he kind of created like this weird and, in my opinion, dangerous leader cult around him.
This is all sounding very familiar, by the way.
Really, does it?
Yes.
He was the new leader of the party. Then he also, of course, ran for chancellor in the next election because he demolished the coalition. And in that general election in 2017, his party came first. And he is a new chancellor now. And what he then did was he formed a coalition with the party that I already mentioned, the FPÖ, this is the part where it gets so bad that I want to vomit into my microphone, which I'm not going to do because it's not mine. I stole it from my flatmate. It's horrible. So the FPÖ is not just your run-of-the-mill right-wing populist party. The FPÖ is as right as it is legally possible in Austria. That means they are as right as possible without being an explicit Nazi party. And I have to say that the party itself is not illegal, of course, but there are many people within the party who were convicted of. The FPÖ is historically the direct successor of the National Socialist Party, the NSDAP. It was founded by Nazis, so it's kind of the direct successor of that party. The FPÖ mostly consists of men, obviously, and those men are mostly from what we call Schlagende Burschenschaften. So that's very difficult to explain because it's something very Austrian.
They have them in Germany too.
Well, yeah, but in Germany they're not as nearly as powerful as in Austria. So Burschenschaft directly translates as fraternities, but it's very different from what you understand as fraternities in the US. So
it's more those like fraternal organizations, like male organizations
And they are all male. Of course, they are sexist, racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic. And those are also full of neo-Nazis, basically. And usually those organizations also believe that Austria is and should be a part of Germany. So they say that Austria already is part of the German Kulturgemeinschaft.
They have very different histories, by the way. Germany and Austria have like very different histories, very different like cultural and social histories. They share the same language, but like they definitely have distinct like historical foundations.
Yeah, and I mean, you probably know that during the National Socialist regime, they were one country. There was like the Deutsche Reich and Austria was part of that. And that idea that Austria should be part of like Germany or is part of Germany goes back to that. The term that we use to describe those people is Deutschnational, so German nationalists, basically. And I think it's a few weeks ago now, there was an election in Lower Austria. And in that election, the candidate that ran for the FPÖ, for the right-wing party, of course, he's also a member of such an organization, as most men in the FPÖ are. And a book surfaced that was full of like Nazi songs and anti-Semitic songs. And it was actually full of like songs about burning Jewish people and how much fun it is and stuff like that. So I'm not joking. There were actually Nazi songs in that. And so that's the type of right wing we are talking about here.
Now, I want to say, like, in the US, we've had like this kind of emergence of a right-wing neo-Nazi kind of, they felt empowered in the United States. And in Germany, they voted in, one of their more right-wing parties got into parliament. But they only got into parliament with like 13% of the vote. This is more than 50% of the people voted for these two parties.
Yeah. Yeah, a huge part of the population decided that that's not a problem for them and that they vote for this party. And I think, you know, I mean, it's a long debate, but Austria historically didn't deal with its national socialist past in the way that Germany did. And so there was never this break with those ideas, I think. So and there was always this underground of people who kind of still believed those things and still participated in those organizations and still organized somehow, you know? And they are now in power, basically. So that's the problem we're having. And also, we call them Schlagende Burschenschaften. So Burschenschaften means like fraternity. Deutschnational means Germans, German nationalists. And then Schlagend, which it can be translated as like beating. Or, and the reason why they call it Schlagend is that they actually still fight duels with sabers.
They do this in Heidelberg, too. They have these Burschenschaften in Heidelberg as well. And they, yeah, the having like a scar from a duel is like a point of like pride.
Those guys are called Schmiss. I'm actually going to post a picture in our show notes, a link to a picture of like young like men fighting duels and like the blood that's running down their faces. It's completely ridiculous. Yeah. It shows us what type of masculinity is celebrated in those circles. And also, if you look at the Austrian government, the male ministers that are in power, all of them have those wounds in the face. So they're all part of, or many of them, not all of them, of course, but like you see that a lot. And so that's a sign that they're part of those organizations. And that's, of course, very problematic. So another thing that's very problematic about this government is that now the Ministry of Defense and the Minister of the Interior is within the hands of the FPÖ. So that means both the police and the army.
Oh, wow.
Which usually doesn't happen. Usually coalitions in Austria kind of one party has like the police and one has is responsible for the army, and now the FPÖ has both. And that also means that they have full access or are responsible for the secret services. So the thing is that people that have been observed by the secret service up until this point because they've been considered possibly dangerous are now in power of it.
Okay, so that's basically like they've been investigated by the equivalent of the US FBI, and now they're running the equivalent of the FBI. That's great.
Basically. I mean, it's not as powerful as in the US, but yeah, there's like one guy specifically, whose name I forgot, that was one of the most important figures in a fake news site called Uncensuriert.at, which is like a right-wing extremist fake news site. I don't know how else to describe it, but they're like really, really far right. And he was basically, I think, running it for some time. And he was investigated by the Secret Service. And
the
now
equivalent in the US of like Breitbart.
Yeah, yeah, I think you can. Yeah, maybe even more right, you know.
Oh, crap. More right than Breitbart shit.
A different, maybe a different like variety of right, you know, like more like the European German nationalist type of, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, so that's a huge problem. So now we talked a lot about like the government in general. I just wanted to, you know, give especially those listening in the US and outside of Europe who probably in your like the news you consume, there's not much news about Austria because it's not a very like significant country if you look at it globally. So I wanted to give listeners an overview of what's happening at the moment. I think it's very important when we also, you know, against the to have that kind of background information when we talk about the situation of human of women's rights.
I agree.
Now, I would like to say a few words on the coalition program and what it says about women's rights and LGBT rights. The coalition has a 3-page subsection titled Women, so Frauen.
So one would think that that means they care a lot about women's rights.
Well, so the first sentence is, and I'm going to say that in, I'm going to quote it in German first, and then I'm going to try to translate it in English. So it states, Frauen in Österreich übernehmen und tragen heute Verantwortung in allen gesellschaftlichen und lebensentscheidenden Bereichen, wie beispielsweise in der Erziehung, Pflege, Bildung, Wirtschaft, Umwelt oder in ehrenamtlichen Tätigkeiten. And I translated that as, today women in Austria take on responsibility in all societal spheres, such as bringing up children, care, education, economics, the environment, or voluntary work.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is that it's in allen gesellschaftlichen und lebensentscheidenden Bereichen, which is not just societal, it's also like decisions about life, which again, one would assume that that is like having to do with women's bodies and...
Well, you know, so when I, well, we're going to go into that later when we talk about what they plan when it comes to abortion and all that. But what I found interesting is that they explicitly state education, care for children, and voluntary, as in unpaid work, is women's domains, basically.
You mean they want to keep the status quo with women doing the majority of the unpaid work?
Well, maybe. I don't know. It sounds like it, doesn't it? Well, I mean, they also state economics, but I just asked the question, why specify the specific responsibilities of women when you already say, like, all spheres of life at all, you know? I mean, you don't need to state specific things that women do if you say everything before that, you know?
Well, because they don't actually mean everything.
Of course they don't mean everything, and that specification is not accidental. Yeah. And all the domains they mention are stereotypically, traditionally thought of as women's work. I mean, the only thing they forgot about is cooking and cleaning, right?
Well, that's like the regular, everyday women's work. That's the unpaid labor, the voluntary labor.
Yeah, and maybe the care work, too, that they talk about. Yeah. What I also found striking about the program is that they stress the difference between men and women. So they clearly talk about two categories that are clearly differentiated. And also the section on women takes up 3 pages only, and they don't really say anything substantial. They take the time to stress that men and women are different. That's literally in the program. They state that men and women are different and that they have to be different for society to succeed. They explicitly state the difference between men and women is a necessary part of life and also inviolable is the word that I'm looking for, and inextricably linked to human dignity. So they also link the difference between men and women to the idea of human dignity.
I am currently working on rewriting an article about like 19th century, early 20th century psychology that traffics in this kind of biological essentialization of women. Mm-hmm. And this is not even a 19th century thing. This is like a medieval thing. This is something from the classical era. And the fact that you have a government program in Austria that is just reifying this biological difference between men and women is just wow.
Yeah, wow indeed. Yeah, and as you already mentioned before, they also clearly state that they conceptualize family as a union of man and woman. Remember men and women as in those drastically different types of human beings. And also that this unit is intended to bring forth biological children. So it's a strictly heteronormative idea of the family as a nuclear family. And then they also, of course, forget about single parents, about blended families, about LGBT parents, about everything that happens in this world.
Well, I mean, they don't really forget about them. They are very explicit about not including them.
Well, that's true. Yeah, let's put it that way. I'm sorry. Yeah, of course. Of course, that's not... I mean, of course, they forget it intentionally, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But fun fact, actually, one of the first things that this and we have to say that both of those parties explicitly stated that they're against marriage equality. But one of the first things that they had to do, because the High Court in Austria decided that, is that they had to make a law to allow for marriage equality. Which is kind of in your face. Yeah.
Right? So. I mean, it's like, it doesn't matter that you are in charge. Mm-hmm. Like, this is against the, you know, constitution of Austria, so you have to allow it.
Yeah, so the coalition was formed in December, and starting with the 1st of January, there's marriage equality in Austria. And it was not a political decision, but it was...
That's awesome.
It's awesome, but it was not a political decision, but it was a court decision, so... It's probably not surprising that the FPÖ's program is... It's queerphobic and sexist. I mean, it's kind of part of the program. But I think it's also important to note that there is nothing new about the new ÖVP, the new People's Party, for example. So today I did a bit more research about the types of people, because I didn't really know any of them that are now like in the government or MPs for them. And I came across one person, and her name is Gudrun Kugler-Lang. And she's one of the MPs for the ÖVP now. And she's a very conservative Catholic. She is a quote-unquote Christian activist and a very militant anti-abortion activist. By the way, she also, and that's so awesome, you have to look it up. I mean, you have to see it on YouTube to actually believe it. I watched a YouTube clip with her, and it's like an interview where she talks about a platform that she founded online. And it's called Kattreff, and it's not a dating platform, but like a marriage platform for Catholics. Okay, that's just a side note. but I found it.
I mean, we have a dating / marriage platform for Catholics called like, or for Christians called Christian Mingle.
But, yeah, I know that yeah. one, but that one is explicitly for Catholics and it's not a dating platform. It's a marriage platform. So you explicitly go there to find someone to marry because of course you want to marry right away.
It's like The Bachelor for Catholics.
Exactly. So in 2005, there were voices within the UVP that explicitly positioned themselves against her. But now, apparently, the UVP doesn't have a problem with accepting activists against women's rights in the midst. So there's nothing very new about it. Concerning reproductive freedom and reproductive rights, the coalition program states that pregnant women need special support. What does that mean? Like, what could they possibly mean? Are they maybe talking about better childcare or better access to abortion or better access to medical care, better financial support or measures to prevent unwanted pregnancies such as free contraception? Of course not.
It would be nice if that's what they meant.
That's not what they mean. They mean that women should have to do mandatory medical and social counseling. My cat just came. Hi, Mooney. Say hi. Hi, Mooney. Well, okay. She doesn't agree with this. Okay, don't walk on the laptop. No. Okay. Yeah, they want women to have to do mandatory medical and social counseling or consultation before they get an abortion done. So on top of all the hurdles that there already are, they also want to force women, in the worst case scenario, to get lectured about other options that they also have and why they should not get an abortion. I know that's the worst case scenario, but knowing those two parties, that worst case scenario doesn't seem very unlikely.
Oh, yeah.
And what I also quote unquote love about the program is that when they talk about violence against women, they mostly, or first and foremost, talk about perpetrators of violence that are refugees.
So here's the thing. Most of the people who perpetrate violence against women are intimate partners.
Exactly.
Not refugees. Yeah. Unless the refugee is the intimate partner of the person who has the violence committed against them.
Yeah, exactly. Intimate partners or sometimes also fathers yes. and uncles. Mostly it's people that you know. So it's not the refugee that came and jumps at you on the street. That's usually not what happens. But it's not a surprise because the whole campaign that also the People's Party kind of did before the election concentrated on, campaigning against refugees.
Yeah, I mean, we had something very similar in the United States during the election.
I know, so it probably doesn't surprise you. But the thing is, we are used to that happening when it comes to the FPÖ. It's something new that the People's Party, which is supposed to be kind of a center-right-wing party, also did the very same thing. So it was a very populist right-wing campaign. And it's now a very populist right-wing party. So, you know, a lot of things happened in the... Now it's 1.5 months at the time of this recording since they've been in power. And I honestly, I have to say, I missed a lot of things because I just can't deal with them at the moment. It's too much, you know. But they are planning to reverse free access to university education. They have plans to cut all kinds of social benefits, including unemployment compensation. They want to cut funding for queer feminist media, which means that magazines like Anschläge, which is the most important feminist magazine in Austria, will probably die, basically, if not enough people subscribe to it. What they also do, and I think that's something they cover from Trump, is that they relentlessly attack media, which I find really scary because I think every democracy needs independent quality media, and they really, really work on demolishing that image.
Yeah, no, I mean, this idea that, you know, like there may be people in the media who personally are more liberal. But their reporting is typically, I mean, there are obviously some people who bring their own politics into their reporting, but the reporting is typically, I would say 99% of the time, it is relatively objective and they're presenting the facts.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't like the facts that they're presenting, then you say that the facts are fake and that they're making it up and that they, you know, can't be trusted. And this is something that we've seen again and again in governments that become very powerful and one might say totalitarian, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and what the FPÖ has been doing all along was kind of pushing those fake news portals that they're also closely connected to, basically bashing actual news pages and news media. And so you may know that we have the ORF in Austria, which is like the public TV station that is also funded by the state. And the idea behind ORF originally was to be like independent of the economy, so to say, that they're like really, that's possible to actually have independent reporting in Austria. And a few weeks ago now, they attacked one of their most important journalists, Armin Wolf. The vice chancellor actually posted a picture of him, and it said something like, ORF is the place where lies become news. Which is really, really problematic. And that's one of the things that they did that really scared me, because I think we can't stress it enough, any functioning democracy needs strong, independent, critical media that observe what's going on and comment on what's going on. And then one thing that also happened is that the Minister of Inner Affairs, who's also unsurprisingly a Burschenschafter, he suggested camps at the outskirts of Vienna to quote unquote concentrate refugees.
Shut up.
Now,
shut up.
I don't know. How could we call that? Maybe like camps for concentration?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure there exists a word somewhere, you know?
In the US in the 80s, we had a politician who was, I think he was running for president, Pat Buchanan, who said that we should take all people who had AIDS.
Oh.
Because it was a way to try and control the AIDS crisis.
Obviously.
That we should put them all in camps.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
So I'm glad we've come so far.
Yeah, here we are in 2018. So yeah, this is not just a right-wing government. It's not like, it's a very, very right-wing government. So Voldemort is back, you guys. The Death Eaters run the ministers. It's time for Dumbledore's army. And also fuck the government. I put that in the script. I put the words fuck the government in the script.
Yes.
So Dumbledore's army, thank goddess, it's already information. So I have to, before I'm telling you about the Dumbledore's army that is information at the moment, I want to tell you something about the year 1997, because in April of 1997, a popular petition, the so-called Volksbegehren for women's rights took place in Austria. And about 665,000, yeah, people signed it. And the main demand was equal pay back then. Well, we're still very far away from that, as we told you. And yeah, so looking at what women wanted to achieve in 1997 and where we are today is extremely frustrating. And many women are still not economically independent. Women have less money at their disposal than men, you know, are much more frequently poor. There is a lovely pay gap, still no equal participations in politics, etc., etc. And because so little progress has been made in the years since the first Frauenvolksbegehren in 2017, so last year, a group of feminist women started the Frauenvolksbegehren 2.0. And you can support it right now. You can go to your local Magistratische Bezirksamt or Gemeindeamt and sign it. So do that now, please. We are waiting for you. So the things that the Frauenvolksbegehren wants to achieve, or the demands that they have, is that there are lots of them. So I'm gonna take out a few of them and tell you about it. So they want half of all the party tickets on all levels of government to go to women.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. I didn't expect any veto on that from you, from your side.
Yeah.
You're like, yep, okay. They want half of the positions in like advisory committees. I didn't know how to translate Interessensvertretungen.
Yeah, I mean, is that like the labor unions who will work with the government?
Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah, things like that. So like half of the positions in like unions, commissions, boards, et cetera, should go to women. And also the same goes for companies. So women should make, there should be quotas, gender specific quotas in companies, independent of the company's size.
Which is interesting, because in both Austria and other countries, they have these quotas, but they are dependent on the size of the company being like 1,000
exactly.
employees. And so to say that even a smaller company should include women is pretty progressive.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's, I think, yeah, as you said, 1,000 employees, and they want that to be the case for all companies. And then also sanctions if those quotas are not fulfilled. And I should add that quota doesn't mean that any company should just employ any woman. But it always, a quota always means that if you have a man applying for a job and a woman applying for the job, and they're both equally qualified, then you take the woman. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that you have hordes of unqualified women in power if quotas happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you have hordes of unqualified men right now.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. So they also want wage transparency, and also companies should be forced to make concrete plans to combat wage inequality in those companies. They want social and economic measures to combat those inequalities on a political level. So the companies themselves should do something, and politicians need to do something to actually bring forward legislation that changes the situation. And then they also want subventions and like public appointments to only go to the companies that are very active in trying to achieve said equality. I think the most controversial of the demands was that they also want working hours cut down to 30. So instead of, now it's around 40.
So I know that other European countries mm-hmm. have under 40, like 36 or 34.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. At the moment, I think it's 30. I think it's 37.8 or something. That's like,
but
the...
definitely under 40. 30 is pretty dramatic.
Yeah. Then one thing that's also very important, I think, is that they want free childcare for... And when I say they, I actually say me because... Or us, because I also, of course, I signed the Frauenfox again. But so we also want free childcare for every child up to 14, and that childcare should be independent of the child's parents' income or place of living. Because as I said earlier, in rural areas, it can be very, very difficult to actually have access to childcare. Then when it comes to the topic of reproduction, reproductive rights, they want sex ed in schools. Yes. Amen to that.
I still can't believe that you don't have sex ed in schools. That just boggles the mind.
So I didn't have it. I don't think, I mean, I can't, I mean, probably there are individual schools that have sex ed, but I never had it. And I don't think it's like part of the official education plan of schools to do sex ed. I think it's, as I said, part of like reproductive biology in biology classes, but not actual sex education.
Yeah. In the United States, it depends on where, what state you're in and what area you're in. I'm from California, and so we're pretty open about that kind of stuff. And so I had sex ed. But I know in some areas they only teach abstinence. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. And that's like...
Oh, yeah.
Abstinence before marriage, though.
Just don't have sex.
Before marriage or like ever...
I guess it's before marriage, but I don't think they talk about that. I just think that they tell, like, kids, like, don't have sex. And then somehow kids get pregnant though they've been told not to have sex. What?
Yeah. And then doesn't it also happen that a lot of times they think of sex as just, like, penis and vagina intercourse, and then they have other types of sex, and then they have, then, like, STDs are spreading, like...
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I didn't go to Catholic school, but from what I hear, in Catholic schools particularly, at least this is like the rumor and the like, whatever, oral sex, anal sex, whatever, none of, you know, hand jobs, all of that stuff, that's all like not included in sex. Like that's not really sex. Mm-hmm. That's, if you can't get pregnant, it's not sex.
It's just things that weird people do.
Yes.
Yeah, then also what I think is very important is that they want free contraception, free pregnancy tests, free and legal abortion, and also free and publicly funded information centers concerning issues of sexuality, sexual identity, gender identity, contraception, protection from diseases, abortion, all of that. And then also that every public hospital has to perform abortions, which is so important for women not to have to kind of travel through all the country to get an abortion.
Yeah.
One thing that's kind of missing from all of that, I think, was the topic of menstrual products. So a few months ago, almost a year, I looked at a date, it was almost a year ago, I wrote an article about the tampon tax in Austria. Mm-hmm. Because right now, products of like daily usage are taxed with 10%. But like tampons and pads and all of that are still taxed with 20%.
What?
Which is completely unfair. And so about a year ago, there was this huge discussion in Great Britain about the so-called tampon tax, or the, and when I say tampon tax, I mean like the taxation of menstrual hygiene products. The Guardian kind of reported that a lot of girls from poorer families cannot afford menstrual hygiene products and have to use like toilet paper or stuff like that. And then there was a petition to make menstrual hygiene products to give it away for free in schools. Yeah, so I think that's something we also need. We need a first step, like a lower taxation of menstrual hygiene products, because they're not luxury items, you know. There's not like caviar.
No, it's not a luxury at all.
No, we need that, you know, and it should be like an item of daily usage, like bread or whatever.
Yeah, just because it's an item of monthly usage doesn't mean that it's not something that is absolutely required.
And actually, you know, during the course of a lifetime, people, as in people with vaginas, people who menstruate, have to spend around 16,000 euros on their menstruations. So given the fact that those people are mostly women who earn much less money, that's just so fucking unfair. So I think...
Agreed.
So I think the least a government could do is, you know, taxing menstrual hygiene products fairly. I think the best thing would be, and also the fairest thing I think would be to give people who menstruate the you know, free access to menstrual hygiene products. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of missing from the Frauenvolksbegehren, but I also wanted to mention it because I think it's also a very important issue. Yeah, then when it comes to, you know, violence, the want more free of charge and easily accessible centers for women who are affected by intimate partner violence and the children of those women. And they also want that nationwide and not just in urban areas. More cooperation between authorities, courts, and Gewaltschutzzentren, so like centers that prevent violence. They want, you know, pupils in school to be sensibilized. They want programs in the justice system and in the police so that those working in those systems can learn about, you know, the signs and the, you know, how to prevent it. Programs also to prevent domestic violence and anti-violence trainings. And then when it comes to female refugees, and I think that's also so important, especially in light of the whole, you know, refugee debate that's going on in Austria, that is mostly negative and it's mostly one that attacks refugees and also kind of paints them as perpetrators of violence. It's also important to see how they are, how refugees are victims of violence and how maybe women who come here as refugees have different needs from men. And so they also demand like gender segregated safe spaces for women and gender specific medical and psychological therapy and a resident status that is independent of the resident status of the husband, because that's still not happening in Austria.
Yeah, that's so important. But when you think it was just 1975 when women got the right to work without mm-hmm. their husband's permission. I mean,
you mean like what do you expect?
Yeah. I mean, like it's not surprising that they would absolutely tie the resident status of the husband, the wife to the husband. But what I think is interesting about that is that they keep having these conversations that like, oh, well, you know, if it were just women and children coming from these countries as refugees, then it would be fine. But we're getting all of these like young men. Okay, well, then allow the women to have a refugee status that's separate. And if their husband or whoever commits an act of violence, like, okay, then this woman can still be protected.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And of course, also what's absolutely necessary is that women-specific and gender-specific reasons for flight are recognized, according to the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. So that's also very, very important. Yeah, so much about the Frauenvolksbegehren. If you are in Austria, if you're an Austrian citizen somewhere else in the world, you can also sign it online. I think that's also important to say. You can sign it in Austria at the Gemeindeamt or Magistratisches Bezirksamt. Please do that. It's really an important, like they talk about a lot of important issues. And I think especially in light of the current like political developments in Austria and in light of the formation of this new government, I think it's more important than ever to have like a feminist resistance. Yeah.
So I have a question about the Frauenvolksbegehren, because we don't have anything like this in the United States.
I know.
What happens once it's signed and you get an X number of signatures on it?
Okay, so it's really complicated. So, yeah, it actually is. And I don't know if I fully understand it, but the thing that happens is that every Volksbegehren, I translated it as people's petition, but I don't know if that's really...
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to that.
It needs, I think, 8,000 and something Unterstützungserklärungen, so like declarations of support. And then the Volksbegehren can take place, okay? And then the Volksbegehren itself needs, I think, 100,000 support, like votes, votes of support. And then it has to be discussed in parliament.
Okay, so in the, at least in California, we have a similar thing. You get a certain number of signatures on like a petition to put it up on the ballot.
Yeah.
And then, at least in California, it automatically gets voted in. But it sounds like it has to be passed by X number of voters to then be considered by your parliament.
Exactly. But also the declarations of support that we can sign at the moment are also added to the actual signatures that are going to happen later.
Okay.
And I think at the moment they already have 100,000, so it definitely will have to be talked about in parliament.
That's great.
Yeah. It's an actual, it's actually very successful, but still, I think every vote counts. So if you haven't signed it yet, then please do that. Okay. So, yeah, we know that we left out a million things that are also important to talk about because we don't have the time. But please feel free to join our Facebook discussion group. And anything that you have to add, you can add there. Also, suggestions for further episodes or just generally things that you want to discuss, you can do that there. You can also pop us a line on Facebook or write us an email. Our mail is shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. And you can tweet at us at shepersistedpod. And there will be an interview coming your way with Clara Galistl, who is a very good friend of mine, and we will talk about the whole Me Too debate in Austria, and this is one of the reasons why we left it out here. So stay tuned.
And our next main episode is going to be about women's rights in the United States, so stay tuned for that.
Exactly. And if you like, as I already said, if you like a show and think that feminist content is valuable and that you want to support us, then please... please rate and review us on Facebook, on iTunes, on Stitcher, anywhere you listen to this podcast. It really, really helps us. It really helps other people to find us. So the more buttons you push, the better, basically. Also, as we said, this is free content and it will remain free content. But if you want to contribute something, we would be so happy about that. You can donate some money via Patreon, and our Patreon page is patreon.com/shewhopersisted. So as we said, making a podcast is a lot of work. We're doing that without getting paid. Rather, we put in money and we want to sustain it. We want to improve it. So if you can give a small amount, that would be so lovely. As I said, pledges, I think, start at $1. And right. Also, check out the Riot Radio page on SoundCloud. You can find the link to that on our Facebook page because we are also involved in Riot Radio, as I said in the beginning. Our homepage is shewhopersisted.com. And what can people take away from this episode today?
Oh, crap.
What's the moral of the story, Liz?
That is a really great question. Austria is an awesome place, but there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And Voldemort and the Death Eaters can be defeated.
Exactly. So join Dumbledore's army and stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.
Bye.